It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Unlike everybody else in America today, I'm numb, I'm heartbroken, I'm depressed. How do we keep going through this? Time after time after time after time after time, and yet nothing changes. This story out of Texas, the mass shooting of fourth graders, 19 children killed, as I'm speaking to you now, and 2 teachers, is unfortunately not unique. We're just coming up on the 10th anniversary of the elementary school shooting at Sandy Hook in Connecticut. And not much has changed. Now, I know we're going to get into a debate about guns and mental health and background checks and all that. But I don't understand. I truly don't understand. I've covered this issue since Columbine. The country has been through this since Columbine. I don't understand how we can continue to fail when it comes to the very basic duty of protecting our children. You know, it's not that one mass shooting is different than another mass shooting. I mean, it's just took place 11 days after the horrifying gunning down of 10 mostly black people in a Buffalo supermarket by a crazy, obviously racist suspect. So then it was about racial prejudice. The very next day, California church, anti-Taiwanese alleged shooter gunning down people, wounding people and killing one person. It happens over and over and over again. And what do you get from here in Washington? You get a lot of speeches. You get thoughts and prayers. And you get nothing changing. Nothing changing. What is it about our political system that can allow this to go on and nothing changes? This is a hard one for me and for everybody. And you think about not just, you look at the pictures of these kids. It is just a national disgrace that we can't take any action to at least minimize. You're never going to stop all mass shootings. There's too many guns floating around. To at least minimize this. And this is the second straight one carried out by somebody who had only recently turned 18. Not going to mention his name. Not going to get into that, except as it relates to what actually happened. And, you know, I turned on the TV last night. And by the way, a number of people have said to me, I can't watch this. I got to, you know, I watch a little bit, I get the update, and I got to turn it off. I got to go do something else, read a book, listen to music, whatever. And I understand. It's hard. It's hard for those of us in the business who keep covering these tragedies, these unspeakable tragedies, to go through the same thing. And, you know, when you turn to the political debate, you know, it's people saying the same thing they said after Buffalo, the same thing they said after Orlando, the same thing they said after Las Vegas, the same thing they said after Sandy Hook and Virginia Tech, and on and on and on. We've had mass shootings now in elementary schools and in high schools, Parkland, Florida, and some of those parents who became understandably activists on the gun issue have been speaking out. And colleges like Virginia Tech and others. We've had mass shootings in theaters. We've had mass shootings in shopping malls and hotels. It's just unbelievable. It makes you wonder, like, what is the point of having a government that can't protect innocent children? Again, we can't stop all violence. But how about some effort? You know, some of this has to do with politics. There's overwhelming support in public opinion polls and has been for a long time for, I guess, you know, it falls under the rubric of common sense gun control measures. I'll come back to that. I want to talk about watching President Biden last night. So he looked tired, drained, sad. He had just gotten off of something like a 17-hour flight back from his trip to Asia, confronted with another one of these things. And remember, he led the effort when Barack Obama was president after Sandy Hook 2012 to get some gun control reforms and utterly failed, and has utterly failed as president. And he spoke, I thought, just from the heart. He just, you know, it wasn't like a 12, you know, probably didn't have time to write it, but wasn't a 12-point, here's what we need to do. He said, I ask the nation to pray for them, give the parents and siblings the strength in the darkness they feel right now. As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name will we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done? I am sick and tired of it, the president said. We have to act. And don't tell me we can't have an impact on this carnage. Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Why do we keep letting this happen? Where in God's name is our backbone? And I just thought, you know, Biden, who has suffered loss in his own family twice, matched the moment. And, you know, immediately conservatives came on and said he shouldn't have, he's politicizing it, he shouldn't bring up guns. I think he said what needed to be said. I'm not taking a stand here on what particular proposal should or shouldn't pass. Get into that. You know, the time that I thought that I was most optimistic about Donald Trump's presidency was in his first year. And I always viewed Trump as a guy who was kind of elected as an independent. You know, he engineered a hostile takeover of the Republican Party, but he did sign on to all the Republican orthodoxy. And he said he was going to take on the NRA. He says, I'm willing to take the political heat. And there was a meeting about gun control that was televised. And I said, so you know what? It's like Nixon goes to China. Trump could do this. Trump could bring enough of his conservative base along to come up with some kind of compromise. And then a few days later, he met with NRA officials and the whole thing just sort of faded. I think they did one relatively minor thing. But that's the gridlock, you know, gridlock on many issues, but the gridlock that you face today. So a few of the details. You know, here's what I don't want to hear. Washington Post had a headline. I'm not criticizing the paper. It just turned me off. Gunman was bullied as a child, grew increasingly violent, friends say. I understand there's a reporter's obligation to look at that. But who cares? I don't care. I didn't care about the Buffalo guy. I don't care if they had difficult lives and didn't have friends and they were bullied. I care about the fact that they turn 18, they have access to guns. This gunman, alleged gunman, had multiple weapons, and they are so sick and twisted. And what does that say about us as a society? And yes, you can ask, where are the parents? That their way of coping with their lives is to go out and kill a bunch of people, including, in this case, the most innocent victims you could possibly imagine. So here's a story that says in 2021, so that's last year, that's 2 years after two mass shootings left more than two dozen people dead in El Paso, Midland, and Odessa. Governor Greg Abbott signed a wide-ranging law that made Texas one of the largest states to essentially eliminate most restrictions on the ability to carry handguns. It just so happens that Ted Cruz, Greg Abbott, and Donald Trump are going to speak on Friday at the NRA's national meeting. So this is the deadliest shooting since 20 children and six educators killed in Newtown, Connecticut, almost a decade ago. One of the people who made that crusade was Democratic Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut. And he asked, what are we doing? Why are we here if not to try to make sure fewer schools and few communities go through what Sandy Hook has gone through? I am here on this floor to beg, he put his hands together, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues, find a path forward here. Work with us to find a way to pass laws that make this less likely. Now, fairly recently, the House, Democratic-controlled House, did pass some laws, but obviously at the moment it's going nowhere in the Senate. Steny Hoyer, number two House Democrat. How many more times will Senate Republicans express outrage at horrific shootings like the one today in Texas and then block meaningful bipartisan background check legislation supported by 9 out of 10 Americans and most responsible gun owners? At the same time, you have here Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, saying that the notion that Congress is now obligated to do something, particularly with few facts known about the details of the Texas shooting, I don't believe you're going to find much in the record that this 18-year-old was in any way affected by Congress's action or inaction. So the Republican position is this is a slippery slope toward greater gun control. And I know this is, they would say that there's great compulsion or urge to do something, but just doing something that doesn't affect the shootings is not the way to go. School shootings remain relatively rare, but this is stunning. Last year, 2021, 42 school shootings, more than any year since 1999. So far in 2022, at least 24 acts of gun violence on K-12 campuses during the school day. The Washington Post tallied it up, said more than 311,000 children at 331 schools have been exposed to gun violence. The Post has found that at least 185 children, educators, and other people have been killed in assaults, and another 369 have been injured. You know, it may well be, and I always fail to understand when we talk about background checks, keeping guns out of the hands of either violent or twisted or mentally ill people who shouldn't have them, why that is considered a flashpoint. Assault weapons is another thing that gets debated, and although it did pass in 1994, a bunch of Democrats got defeated that year, and Democrats, a lot of Democrats don't want to touch this either. But gun loopholes, gun shows, I mean, these all seem like modest steps that are not necessarily a panacea. But maybe, given that we are failing politically as a nation, as a culture, as a society, we need to have better security at every school and college in this country. Maybe you shouldn't be able to walk into a school, particularly a K-12 school, without going through a metal detector. Maybe there should be armed guards at every school. Now, ironically, at this school in Texas, there were a couple of armed guards who shot at this alleged shooter, but couldn't prevent him from going in. So even that didn't work. But I think we have to look at this from multiple ends. I think there's just a feeling now in the country that this can't go on. Interestingly, in New Zealand, which didn't have much of a gun problem, you know, the bottom line here is the rest of the world looks at America and says, this is nuts. This is crazy. Most countries don't have these kinds of violent mass shootings or don't have them very often. So in New Zealand, there was a mass shooting back in 2019, 51 people dead at Christchurch. The both parties in New Zealand came together. They banned most semi-automatic weapons, then launched a buyback scheme, looking here in the New York Times, to get tens of thousands of firearms out of circulation. The prime minister said the response was pragmatic. When we saw something like that, everyone said, never again, she said while she was on the Stephen Colbert show. Before the massacre, the country's gun laws were so lax it was unclear how many firearms New Zealanders owned. But they took action. Again, maybe that's not the exact action we should take here, but they took some action. So I'll just close this by saying, you know, we're going to hear impassioned debates, and it's going to dominate the news, and both sides are going to accuse the other of bad faith, and guns don't kill people and all that. We need to talk more about background checks. We need to talk more about school security. We need to talk more about mentally ill people. Otherwise, you know, the people who run this country are enablers. Doesn't mean one party or the other has all the answers, but just enablers. It means that we'll be going through this again and again and again. Now, I may feel it slightly more acutely as a journalist because I've had to cover these stories. I can't just turn off the TV. I've got to try to make some sense of it. But they're senseless acts. They're senseless acts of violence by people filled with hate, often young people filled with hate. Hate for blacks, hate for Jews, hate for kids, just hating as well, just trying to end your own life in a blaze of glory, which is what happened here. Thanks for bearing with me. I think we're all struggling as a country with this, and there's something about this one that has made people say this has got to stop. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Well, there is some other news to get to. You know, without this shooting, you would have been the lead story every hour last night, and today would have been the Republican primaries, especially in Georgia. So let's talk a little bit about that. I don't see any way to spin it. The vote in Georgia was a resounding defeat for Donald Trump. And he has a mixed record. And when you look at GOP primaries, he said, well, a lot of my people won. But the most important thing, the headline race there, was incumbent Republican Governor Brian Kemp, who Trump despises. I think if there's one person that Trump could have had defeated, it would have been Brian Kemp. And so the former president backed David Perdue, who lost his seat in the special election last year that gave Democrats nominal control of the Senate. And it wasn't even close. I mean, it was a landslide win for Brian Kemp. He just buried Perdue, who, you know, didn't run a very energetic campaign and must have realized in the last couple of weeks that he was just going to get clobbered. And so Georgia Republican primary voters did not buy, they did not side with Donald Trump, whatever else they might think of him, to think that the most important issue in the race was his claim, his unproven claims that the 2020 election was stolen from him and that Brian Kemp didn't do enough. But you know who else won in Georgia? Again, these are nominations. They have to face Democratic opponents in the fall. Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State. This is the guy who stood up to President Trump and did his job when Trump called and said, could you find 11,780 votes? So Kemp and Raffensperger, you know, well known, I guess, to the people of Georgia, managed to not just survive the Trumpian campaign against them, and Trump had campaigned for Perdue, but to do really well. And the guy that Raffensperger was running against, Jody Heiss, you know, had the strong support of Trump and made election integrity the main issue. Well, the people of Georgia weren't buying it. Raffensperger was on pace, according to AP, to win more than 50% of the vote. Because if you get under 50 in Georgia, then you have to have a runoff. So neither Raffensperger nor Governor Kemp have to have a runoff to win the nomination. Reading here from the Washington Post, all evidence has shown Biden's win in Georgia and nationally was legitimate. And while many Democrats have long rallied against Trump's baseless rhetoric, some powerful Republicans saw the Georgia primary as a potential inflection point that could shift the party away from relitigating the last election and blunt Trump's efforts. Well, maybe. You know, that's how it played out in Georgia, which is still a pretty conservative state, by the way. And then you have, by the way, you know, Donald Trump is going out to Wyoming this weekend to campaign for the Republican opponent of Liz Cheney, who Trump also hates because she voted to impeach him in the second impeachment. There was some back and forth, in case you missed this, in Georgia. Stacey Abrams, who is one unopposed and will be the Democratic nominee for governor again, now facing a rematch against Kemp, made a ridiculous unforced error saying, you know, Georgia is the worst state in the country to live. you know, what she was trying to say was, you know, where we lag the rest of the country and this and that, and it's all the Republicans' fault, and it's Kemp's fault, but she didn't put it that way. She apologized for her phrasing. But just for a professional politician to provide that soundbite, this is the worst state in the country to live, you know, offends the pride of Georgians, understandably. But then David Perdue, who's not running against her, said things that many denounced as racist. He said that Abrams should go back where she came from if she didn't like it here. And you only say that about a person of color. Go back where they came from? And Perdue said that Stacey Abrams was demeaning her own race. Really? She speaks for all black people? I think it's a colossally dumb thing to say that will be thrown back at her, and that's politics. But I don't think Perdue helped himself with that. Speaking of, you know, the extent to which 2020 and Trump's denunciation of what he calls, what his book will be called, The Crime of the Century, is an issue or not, the former president was a guest on Stuart Varney's show on Fox Business, called in. And Varney, who's been a big Trump supporter over the years, really pressed him about the alleged, supposed widespread fraud. Again, not supported by any federal or state lawsuit or by Bill Barr's Justice Department. And Varney says, look, what I hear from a lot of Republicans is they don't want you to look back to the 2020 election and rehash it. They want to look forward. What do you say to that? Well, I do that, Trump said. But if you don't study what happened, if you don't find out, we know what happened. All you have to do is see 2,000 Mules or go on Truth. 2,000 Mules is a Dinesh D'Souza film that many critics have said does not in any way prove widespread fraud in the 2020 election. Truth is Truth Social. Varney, that's not what people are talking about. People don't want you to do that. I think, says Trump, you have to look back. You have to look at history, Stuart. If you don't look at history, you're going to be lost. It's going to happen again. You can't let it happen again. I know you say that, but there's a vast portion of the Republican Party that disagrees with that. They're very upset about it. They're very angry with what happened in the election. You look at the results, I mean, every one of these states. The evidence is so massive. The problem is the press, including Fox, doesn't want to talk about it. Well, I think the press, including Fox, has talked about it endlessly and hasn't moved off the fact that there is no evidence to support the widespread fraud. And I give Stuart Varney credit because this is a guy who he vociferously supported, particularly during the 4 years of his presidency, and he's pressing him again and again. They don't want it to happen again, Stuart. You can't have it happen again. You have to study it. Varney, I'm getting the sense the voters just don't want to go back to a chaotic situation or a toxic situation or really, you know, a negative situation. They want to be positive. They want to look forward to the future and be positive. I think Stuart's onto something. Trump, well, I understand that, Stuart. So somebody robs the jewelry store of all the jewelry. You should just let them alone, right? Just say, okay, you got away with it. You know, I just disagree with that. And a lot of people in the party disagree with that. Okay, that's the former president's point of view. A lot of people in the party in Georgia did not disagree with that. They wanted to look forward. They didn't, I mean, look, there may be other reasons that David Perdue lost so badly. But the fact is, by renominating Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger, the voters of Georgia, which as I say is still a pretty conservative state, are sending a message, at least in their state, that they do want to look forward, that they don't want to spend all their time or much of their time relitigating the 2020 election. So the interview was before Georgia voted, but I think that's a rebuttal. Now in other states, the outcome may be different. One other thing I wanted to get to here that I think we'll get lost is, you know, it's no secret that there is a more than a whisper campaign. I mean, Democrats and media people behind the scenes are talking about and have been talking for some time about whether Joe Biden will run for a second term. He says he plans to, and I don't doubt that he plans to, barring unforeseen health setbacks. There's a big New York Magazine piece which basically said, okay, but if Biden didn't run, you know, who would the Democrats nominate? And that piece focused on governors like Roy Cooper, North Carolina, Jared Polis, Colorado, Gavin Newsom, California. I'm sure he'd love to run. And says, sure, Kamala Harris will run, but is not likely to win. So here's Jonathan Last writing in The Bulwark, conservative website, but not a, let's just say, not a pro-Trump website, taking this on. And Last says the following: I've been saying since the election that barring a health event, Biden will run for re-election in 2024 for one simple reason. There is no other option. So let's hear his argument. Democratic coalition is currently made up of a giant mass of factions, some of which are intention, understatement. They cannot win the presidency without getting close to 52% of the popular vote. And even that margin gives them only about a 50-50 shot at winning the Electoral College. Democrats need to hold together and turn out progressives, African-Americans, young voters, women, Hispanics, and college-educated suburban voters. They need to do this without losing even more ground, and I think they are losing ground, to white, high school educated men. Joe Biden is the only Democrat even theoretically capable of shouldering the burden, says this piece in The Bulwark. Now, he says, are there negatives to another Biden run? Hell yeah. He's very old. He's quite unpopular. Exclamation points. But on the other hand, he has a fairly successful legislative agenda to run on. He did return American political life to something like normal. His administration has been scandal-free. He's been completely and totally vetted. He'll campaign with all the benefits of an incumbent president. That's something that we shouldn't underestimate. I mean, incumbent presidents lose. Jimmy Carter lost. George H.W. Bush lost. But, you know, when you're flying around in Air Force One and you can set policy, in other words, you're both acting as president and as a candidate for reelection, you raise tons of money. That is not something to sneeze at. He starts with, going back to the piece, 81 million Americans who've already voted for him. Well, they could change their minds. That happens. His weaknesses, age, and unpopularity also apply to his likely challenger, Donald Trump. So Jonathan Last says, barring a health event, 95% likelihood that Biden is the Democratic nominee. What the New York Magazine piece says is it became that his early success has passed into torpor. It became clear that Biden's bridge, he talked about, you know, being a bridge to the next generation, wasn't built to completion. For liberal and progressive voters, says New York Magazine, the cognitive dissonance has been significant. It is possible for Democrats to feel profound gratitude for vanquishing Trump to Biden, and even to love some of his work as president, Ukraine, vaccines, Ketanji Brown Jackson, and at the same time to retain an intense feeling of unease about a visibly aging 79-year-old whose Republican opponents are only growing more extremist. I mean, it's a liberal piece. So, you know, you look at the list of people going to run again, in addition to some of these governors, Mayor Pete would probably run again. Elizabeth Warren would probably run again. You can throw out other names. So, I don't know. If Biden is unpopular, as unpopular in 2023 and looks like a sure loser, the pressure might build to the point where he says, I've done what I can, and I'm not going to run for a second term. And that's why, because many people see that as at least a possibility, and a lot of this has to do with the feeling that Kamala Harris has not had a great debut in office, fairly or unfairly. The Bulwark piece says maybe she hasn't gotten a fair shake, but as an objective political matter, she's at a dead end. She's unpopular. She has no independent base of support. She's less the smooth operator she was as a senator and much more the flat-footed bumbler she was as a presidential candidate. Look, it's true. She didn't the fact that she was one of the only African-American candidates in the race didn't help her much. Would it help her in 2024 if she were the nominee as an incumbent vice president? Well, I don't know. Politics is a strange business. Things change. So a lot of this is sheer speculation. But the point of it is that this guy, Jonathan Last, is saying don't write off Joe Biden because the Democrats may conclude, as weak and popular as he seems to be, that they have no alternative. Now, if Donald Trump doesn't run or gets beaten in the primaries, I can't imagine the second part. I can sort of maybe imagine the first part, but I think it's very likely he's already running. Maybe the Democrats would say, hey, we need somebody from a much younger generation, you know, running for would that would then be an open seat. But that will change. It'll change 400 times between now and the election year of 2024. Well, I think I've said what I need to say, what I want to say, what's in my heart about the school shooting. I don't want to end on an overly somber note, but I think it's a somber day for the United States of America. And I think it's time to stop talking about it and figure out what we can do to protect our children. This has been an unusual podcast, but it's not a typical day in America. But maybe it's becoming too common of a day in America, as I say, just 11 days after the Buffalo supermarket shooting. Nevertheless, soldier on. Hope you have a good day. I'd appreciate it if you subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeet.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.